Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To listen without ads, head over to patreon.com/rightandwrong.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
Because the writing is sort of everything, right? Like, you kind of can fix plot holes, but if the writing isn't
so some readers love that, and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Yeah, I know. Those were the days when we had all the holidays. That was nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even realize how much it was until you become an adult and you don't get them anymore.
Yeah. Although having said that, publishing does kind of shut down for the summer. So I even though I am still technically here, I really enjoy the summer holiday vibes of publishing.
Okay. That's interesting.
July and August is kind of like no one would submit anything in August.
To editors.
I always tell authors to submit to me in the summer because that's when I'm like, relaxing. I'm going to have written submissions and find something for Frankfurt. It's a great time to submit to agents.
That's interesting. I'd also heard February was a good time.
February for me is wild. Like that's when I normally sign stuff kind of in the quieter period. I mean, this just might be me. I don't know how other agents work, but I think I sign stuff a lot over the summer to kind of get ready for Frankfurt. And then after Frankfurt, when it quietens down again in the Christmas period, I find I sign stuff in November that then I go out with in sort of February, March for the next round of book fairs.
That makes sense.
So yeah, I feel like the quieter periods for me are when I'm like really focused on submissions. That said, one of my authors, Laura Stephen, she submitted to me sort of the, I don't know, maybe the day before the book fair or the weekend before, and I read it overnight and offered. So if I really love something, book fair is not gonna affect me. But yeah, I think largely when you're sorting through the piles, book fair subs get don't get kind of looked at as quickly. So
yeah. Okay, you know what, that was great. I'm gonna keep it, but let me do the introduction.
Great.
We can start the episode proper. Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. On today's episode, we have a returning guest. She is a literary agent, an author, and the director of children's and YA at Madeleine Milburn. It's Chloe Seeger. Welcome back.
What an introduction. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the agent stuff, for real, the industry stuff, let's kick things off with the fact that somehow, between everything else that you've got going on, you have a new novel out.
Oh, yeah. I do.
Even you forgot.
You do.
It's called Open Minded.
Yeah. It's out in the UK and it's coming out in the US later this year. So that's
amazing. Fun. Tell us about it.
It's an adult rom-com. So I'm betraying children from YA. So it's about these two women who are kind of in opposite situations. So you've got Holly, who has been with her partner for 9 years, and then her boyfriend, out of the blue, she thinks he's going to propose, and then he asks her for an open relationship. And then on the other hand, you've got Fliss, who's been in an open relationship with her partner for 3 years, and then he unexpectedly asks her to close it. And then they meet in a ladies' bathroom and kind of realize they're in polar opposite situations and agree to help each other and become friends. And it kind of charts their romantic dramas and their friendship.
Okay. That's such a fun and unique set of circumstances to set your kind of story and your hijinks up.
It was fun to write.
It must have been quite a departure, because your previous novels, the Emma Nash stories, very much YA and for younger audiences.
Yeah. I feel like, though, even though it's a kind of older audience, it's similar stuff. I mean, I like writing about messy, funny women. So whether I'm writing about them for teens or, you know, in their late 20s, that's the vibe is similar.
Okay. Was it strange for you sort of stepping outside of the YA market, which is obviously one that you're very familiar with in like various capacities, and kind of moving into an adult space?
Yeah, it was. I feel like I've sort of grown up alongside my writing. So not too strange, because I do obviously read adult books on my own time as well. If I just read, I love children's and YA books, but if I read them all the time, I might start to emotionally regress to school age.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do. Because I, you know, my reading taste outside of work, I'll read some, I love an adult rom-com. So it didn't feel like too much of a departure. But I think it's the kind of stuff where I'm like, oh, I'm allowed to swear or like talk about sex and it's fine. So that was interesting.
I guess it offers like a kind of degree of separation where you, if you're writing in that space, you're kind of working in a slightly different space and you don't have as much crossover.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually find that, I mean, I still love to read children's and YA on my own time, but it's also nice to read stuff that doesn't feel like work. So I've become a real granddad in my reading taste. I read a lot of like nonfiction these days. I just finished Unruly by David Mitchell, the history of England's kings and queens, which I know it's David Mitchell, but still made me feel like a granddad. And I'm reading Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. And before that, I was reading like Empire of Pain and Bad Blood. So yeah, like really the kind of, I've gone down a nonfiction rabbit hole a little bit recently. But
that's interesting. I mean, a huge change of pace from YA and MG as well.
Yeah. No, it's nice then to feel like you're not at work. But I also have different reading habits for different formats. So I've been listening to a lot of stuff on audiobook recently, just because, again, like it's something you can fit in when you're walking around or on the tube. And I think nonfiction really lends itself to audiobook. So I've been listening to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I can understand that. You're not, but this doesn't signify any kind of idea that you might be starting an adult list.
Absolutely not.
list. Okay.
I mean, having said that, the YA markets and the adult markets are really blurring at the moment. So I've been sending a lot of stuff. I mean, it's so interesting because a couple of years ago, certain books that I was sending out would only have gone to YA imprints, and now my sublists have broadened incredibly. So I just had the new Lex Croucher book that was announced, the Unmagical Life of Briar Jones. So that ended up going to YA and adult imprints. And actually, in the end, we did sell to Galance, which is an adult imprint, but
yeah,
they're being published by Wednesday Books in the US, which is very much crossover. And we had both, we had 10 publishers in for that, and there were both adult and YA in. So it's happening more and more. I've got something at auction at the moment that we're expecting the first bids in for tomorrow. And again, like it's just sold in a big preempt to an adult imprint in the States, but we had YA publishers interested as well. And tomorrow I've got pretty much an even split of YA adult people landing. So I think that market is really becoming quite blurred.
Yeah,
which is kind of maybe not great for YA publishers because all the adult publishers are coming in and stealing YA authors. But I think it's great for YA because it's really broadening the reach.
Yeah, and I want to pick up on a couple of things you mentioned there. First of all, crossover. I am still not entirely sure what that means. Like, what? Where does the, you know, one end and one begin, and is like its own thing, or how do you define crossover?
It's so hard to define. It's different for every book. So, for instance, with Lex, it's again, they're one of those writers where it's actually really hard to pigeonhole the writing because the humor, there is like a lightness of touch and a humor which feels very young and almost, and there's nothing super sexy in it. It's like a 12-year-old could read it. But also I think that especially with a new one, it's that kind of Harry Potter, but make it queer and like kind of, you know, political takedown, kind of making fun of establishments like Eton and political satire that kind of make it quite grown up. So I think for that book, it straddles a lot of different lanes, but the tone can still be quite young. But I think, you know, people in their 30s will love it as well, for lots of different reasons. And then the one I've just gone out with, actually, I would say is maybe quite YA in certain ways in the content, but then the tone is quite sophisticated. So I think it could just be different for each book, but I know crossover when I see it. Is that helpful at all?
I think so. What I'm getting from that is that it's different, but you can identify it in that it's to do with the themes, the subject matter, the characters, and the kind of style and the voice.
Yeah, the tone.
Yeah, exactly. They can kind of be from either adult or young adult in any combination. But if both are present and they're merged together, that's crossover, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes I get something in which I feel strongly, depending on the concept, should be aged down or up. And then there's certain things. So, for instance, we just, with Laura's recent adult deal, because obviously she has a YA publisher already, we wanted to make sure that the books were really distinct because we want there to be a different audience there. And I think actually then we ended up kind of adding in some stuff to make sure that it was definitely adult.
Yeah,
so that there'd be some crossover in the audiences for Our Infinite Fates and for Silver Cloak, but that they wouldn't be kind of competing with each other too much, or that it wouldn't feel like they weren't distinct from each other. I think it can be harder now for authors to be setting up a YA strand and an adult strand when there's so much crossover in the readership. So for instance, like on, I think the first draft of that, it didn't have a kind of pleasure, pain-based magic system. And then we read the first draft and I was like, I think we should age this up. And then Laura came up with that idea, which was incredible. And I think definitely made it something that couldn't be published on a YA list.
Okay, that's interesting.
But tonally, you know, Laura's work is, this tone of this definitely is older, but I think her tone often sits in that kind of crossover space. So trying to age down one of her strands and age up another can be more about content.
It sounds like a fine balance, and I imagine the editors have to be kind of very aware of, I guess, both age groups that this is appealing. There's not necessarily age groups, but straddling from YA up to adult, as an editor, that must be quite a lot to just make sure those threads do work together alongside, you know, whatever the author's vision is.
Well, I think it's easier for adult publishers to publish down because they are not kind of trying to establish, I guess, a trusted brand with the schools and libraries market. So, with an adult publisher publishing YA, I guess they have room to make it a bit older in a way that they're not then necessarily saying, oh, teenagers should be reading this, but teenagers can still read it. Whereas I think it's really difficult for a YA publisher maybe to be publishing stuff on a YA imprint that has some of that older content in it, because then, you know, you're going to teachers and parents and librarians and saying, this is fine for teenagers, which isn't kind of necessarily true. Although they might be reading it, it's not something, some of these things are not something we can actually market to them, whether or not they choose to read it in their own time. You know, it's kind
of, makes a lot of sense
outside of us. But yeah, I think that's why I think we're probably going to see a lot of new adult imprints spring up, maybe from children's publishers as well.
Okay, so is new adult the same as crossover?
Yes, I would say so. I think it's just a term that fell out of fashion for a while and now people are using it again. I hear it being bandied around now.
That's interesting. That for me at least gave me some clarity on what people are talking about when they do say crossover, because I kind of vaguely knew what it was and I wasn't entirely sure, but that did clear some things up. I also wanted to pick up on something else you mentioned. You said you had another thing waiting to go to auction.
Yes, yeah, I've got about 10 offers coming in tomorrow for something, so that's fun. This is Bologna Book Fair time.
So my question actually is more about the logistics of, we, you know, anyone who goes on the bookseller, you read about these very exciting deals that will go to auction, however many it is. What actually happens in a book auction? Like, what are the logistics of a book auction?
Well, it's different.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every time. So it depends on the number and depends as well on the author and how available they are to meet, or if they have a clear sense of how they want to be published, if that makes sense. So the author I've got tomorrow, she's got quite a busy work schedule. So we've got space for 4 meetings on Tuesday. So we'll be whittling kind of 10 plus offers down based on the first offers to 4 meetings. So people will be knocked out based on their opening bids.
Okay.
Sometimes if we've got lots of offers coming in, I will just say, just put an offer in to throw your hat in the ring, and then we'll do rounds. And then at some point, you know, you have to whittle it down for the author, because they can't really meet 10 publishers. It's not realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Then what we do as well when there's that many in is, obviously it does become about money to some degree. The, you know, the finances are going to be a factor, but we always reserve the right that the author can pick, you know, the publisher they want to go with, even if their offer wasn't financially the highest. So it's, you know, it is about money, but it's about the passion and the vision as well. And we get pitches through when we meet with publicity and marketing, and you know, talk to the publishers about their vision and what they want to do with the book. And that stuff is all really important too.
Yeah. And then presumably you and the author will, after having all the meetings, go back and in private kind of have a discussion and kind of weigh up all the different proposals and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Sounds exciting. I mean, because it's kind of like a reversal of the usual power dynamic, right? Where you're submitting to the publishers and then suddenly the publishers are all coming to you.
Yeah, we have all the power until the project is sold, and then we relinquish it again.
Okay. A lot of back and forth in this industry.
Well, it's kind of the same for authors submitting to agents, isn't it? Like when there's, a, you know, 10 agents after something, suddenly the power is in the author's hands.
Yeah, the power and the pressure.
The power and the pressure, yeah.
The imposter syndrome must kick in there. I know for authors, it's such a prevalent thing, and they must be like, oh, but what if I made the wrong decision? What if I should have gone with the other editor? Da, 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 da.
I think that's the kind of curse, actually, of having almost too many options. I mean, it's a nice problem to have, isn't it? But
yeah.
I do sometimes think when you've got 10 publishers in, if things don't go, you know, maybe as hoped, you always think, oh, maybe that publisher was the right one. Or, but to be honest, when there's 10 publishers in, or there's that many people who want it, I think whoever buys it is going to make a success of it. So
yes,
it'll be great.
You would hope so. And it sounds like you're on a hell of a streak. Honestly, it feels like every time I check on the bookseller, I feel like there's a good chance I'm going to see Chloe has signed another deal with you know, another auction, another lots of people. In fact, I looked at your Instagram this morning before we came on. Just this month, you had 4 book deal announcements.
Well, the book, thank you. That's lovely. But the bookseller, because they all announce stuff around the fairs, it does give you a slightly skewed impression of how many deals I'm doing. So, you know, for instance, the Claire Hatcher deal that was just announced the other day, I did that last year. So,
oh, right.
I did that a whole full year ago. So last book fair.
It's kind of an open secret that this is the thing, and it's like, yeah, we all wait until the book fairs before we announce all these deals. What's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so it's interesting because on the adult side, they actually send things to the bookseller. They release the press release a lot faster. So often in adult, I will do something, you know, and then a few weeks later, the publishers will want to announce it. In kids, it's a little different. They often want to wait until there's like a moment. So for instance, that one that was announced the other day, it was World Down Syndrome Day. And obviously the protagonist has Down syndrome. So that was a really nice connection they wanted to go for. Sometimes they want to wait until there's a cover or a package so that it will encourage people to pre-order more along with the announcement. Whereas an adult, the announcement is just kind of a moment of its own that happens quite quickly. But in kids and YA, you can be waiting for years to announce something, sometimes until a few months before it comes out.
Oh, I hadn't realized that it was actually much quicker for adult publishing. And obviously it's still not immediate, I would imagine. But Yeah, I hadn't realized it was more of a children's thing, that the delays happen and they really hold off on these announcements.
Yeah, definitely more of a children's thing. I think because often there's illustrations and a package to consider in a slightly different way. Also, I think just because it is a smaller market and the, you know, the sales are more challenging, it's a challenging market to break through in. You know, it's so clogged up by big brands that I think it's something publishers want to do to kind of galvanize sales and use the announcement in that way. Whereas in adult publishing, they don't really need to do that.
No, because it's just the much broader audience that they're appealing to.
Yeah, exactly.
Also got to mention, you have been shortlisted for the British Book Awards Literary Agent of the Year. Congratulations.
I have. Thank you. Yes, it's very exciting.
And it doesn't stop there, because am I right in thinking one of your authors, Katie Kirby, also has been shortlisted?
Yes, Katie Kirby is indeed up for Children's Book of the Year, which is very exciting. I'm really happy for her because those books have been selling like hotcakes actually since 2021. So it's great to see her kind of getting this recognition now.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. All this success, and I did mention at the beginning of the episode, but when you first came on, you were literary agent at Madeleine Milbourne. You are now director of children's and YA at Madeleine Milbourne. You are on an amazing trajectory.
When did we do the last podcast? I can't remember.
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah, maybe. I feel like a lot's changed in 2 years, actually.
It might have been more than that. Yeah, it was a long time ago, for sure.
Things have definitely skyrocketed in the last couple of years. It's been busy.
The industry just itself has changed a lot too. I've heard a lot about the kind of how big audiobooks have become in the last few years versus like physical books, and like ebooks are getting bigger and bigger every year and things like that.
Definitely. I think we probably have the pandemic to thank for that with audiobooks, maybe. Yeah. And then I think, and I mean, for me in particular, the rise of YA has just been incredible to see over the last couple of years.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of that's to do with TikTok.
Yeah. And things I was selling at a kind of a certain financial level that, if, you know, a couple of years ago, if I sent out now, would get much bigger deals. It's really interesting.
That's so interesting. And just a reminder that so much of this industry is about zeitgeist and having the right story at the right time, not just for like the publisher or the whoever it might be, the editor, but for the kind of, for the world, you know, for the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And trends come around. I mean, I've just been in publishing long enough to see a few cycles at this point. So it's so funny, like stuff of, you know, 5 years ago that we were all like, no, no vampires. And now everyone just wants vampires again. So
I have heard that. Yeah. It's been long enough since Twilight that vampires are back.
Vampires are back. Yeah. It's official.
Speaking of when you first came on, it's been a long time since then. I imagine you will have signed a number of authors between then and now. Do you know roughly how many authors you represent?
Gosh, how many did I have last time we spoke? Do you remember?
I don't know. I don't know if I even asked, to be honest. But I imagine it would be a lot fewer. It's been at least 2 years.
Yeah. I think now I have somewhere between 40 and 50.
Okay. And as your list grows, does it make signing new writers and stories more difficult? Is it kind of a much greater consideration?
Yeah, it does. I think realistically, I sign less people now, but I'm still always the kind of agent who's always going to be on the hunt for something that I really fall in love with, because signing something, you know, pulling something out of the pile, finding something you really love and you think can go big, is one of the most exciting parts of the job. And I, you know, it's a part I love. It is something that, as you have clients, you know, to look after, more clients to look after, you have to do less of, but it's still something I love. I just have to be a bit more considered about it now. So I would say now I kind of look for one thing per book fair, really. So I would say,
and like limit yourself there.
Yeah, exactly. So this year, I mean, end of last year, I took on two new authors who are my kind of Bologna books, a middle grade and a YA, just because I really fell in love with both of them. And then I haven't signed anyone this year, but I have space for something I really love at Frankfurt. So if I find something for Frankfurt that I'm obsessed with, I'll go for it. I think it's nice for me. I'm in the position where I don't have to be signing stuff now. Mm-hmm. So if I don't find something for Frankfurt, that's also fine, but I have the space for something.
It's so interesting that you are like planning ahead to reserve space in your kind of schedule and your list for, it's like, oh, I can fit a book in now. So if I find something, I'm allowed to put it on the list, you know. That's such a funny, it's also not something I really thought about before, but yeah, I guess you have to be sensible and practical about that kind of thing when your list is large now. And I guess you're at a point where it's not necessarily about how much you like something. Obviously that's important, but you might not have the right shaped kind of space in your list because you can't be competing with yourself, basically.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's tough because as an agent, your taste is your taste. So mm-hmm. it's like, because we've got the Whisperix launch party tonight and that's out tomorrow, which is really exciting. And I love kind of gothic middle grade, like in that kind of area. Obviously, yeah. Because I have Jordan, it's sort of that thing of I can't have too much stuff in that, but I can't be, you know, as you say, kind of cannibalizing my own sales. Mm-hmm. So it's more about finding stuff that is sort of that I love because I love that space, but feels a bit different to the stuff I've already got.
Yeah.
Which is quite a hard line to tread, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Because I got an advert the other day on Instagram, and Instagram's figured out that I like fantasy. And it gave me this advert for this book, which I'm assuming was self-published. And it said, Mistborn meets The Name of the Wind. And any fantasy readers listening will know that those are two books that are remarkably similar. This is like describing a movie as James Bond meets Mission Impossible. And to me, I was just like, but why would I want that? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like both of those exist and they're both great. Why would I want something in the middle of that?
Yeah. Yeah, true.
And I guess that's what you're thinking about when you're mm-hmm. looking at things where you're like, I can have two things which have similar themes and similar kind of concepts, but as long as they're distinct enough,
but they can't be exactly the same. I mean, exactly. It's so funny because, I mean, Maddie B pointed out to me the other day, she was like, you love a demon pact, don't you? We all books have demon pacts. And then I looked and I was like, oh my God, you're right. I've got like three demon pact books coming out. And then I was like, all right, no more pacts with demons for me. So there's certain things where, yeah, you're just, otherwise you, especially for my rights team as well, because I have to consider for them, they're selling my stuff internationally. I might mm-hmm. be able to find a publisher who missed out on something I sold. You know, for instance, this book tomorrow, there's 10 publishers, obviously only one's going to get it. There'll be 9 people who might want something in that space. But then it's kind of whether I can represent all of those books. And also then my rights team will be focusing on those books internationally. And then if we have a list that's essentially really similar books over and over, that's not very good for people's international sales either. And I think actually authors don't really see that in that side of things. I mean, no one thinks about the kind of international rights side of it when they're subbing, but that's also quite an important piece for children's and YA and all books really, but
yes,
especially kids and YA.
I was speaking to my friends who are authors, and it's very exciting when you get a message from your agent or whoever it might be that's saying like, oh, we just sold in Germany, or we just sold the rights in France or wherever it might be, because financially it represents, you know, quite a lot of money, but at the same time, it shows that there's the appetite for your writing and for your novel in a whole entire market that obviously might have never experienced the author.
Yeah. And I think building that global brand is something that can be really career solidifying for mm-hmm. an author. So, yeah. And it's something that all publishers want. I mean, in children's, publishers are especially obsessed with it. They'll always want to go for world rights because building that global brand is so important to them for their sales. And I think in children's, it's kind of, you know, if something really takes off, it can be that huge global brand, and kids all over the world will just want more of the same thing. So yeah, it's something that kids publishers are really invested in.
Oh, that's interesting. A quick question before we return to the desert island. When you do sign with a new author, when you kind of, when you're kind of first meeting with them and talking to them and planning things out, are you looking on a sort of long-term career stuff, or do you try and keep it simple and say, okay, let's find a deal. Once that's sorted, we come to the next bridge. We cross that bridge when we come to it.
I definitely like to know what people's ultimate career vision is. And then that's how I could help map a way, you know, towards that. I think, for instance, with Laura, I always knew she wanted a YA and an adult strand set up, so that I needed to know that in order to, we didn't send her YA to adult publishers and we didn't send her adult to YA publishers, you know, so we kept the strands very distinct. If I hadn't had that initial conversation with her, then, you know, I wouldn't have known that from the beginning. So I think I do like to know what people want. At the same time, it is very dependent on what happens. You know, I think we can have a lot of big dreams and we always want to make them happen, but it does depend step by step. You know, if you have one book and it doesn't go so well, the best thing to do might be to pivot and write in a completely different genre, or it might be to keep going in the same genre but write under a different name. So whilst I can't always plan exactly what's going to happen, I like to know what people want to happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds like it's a bit of both, really.
It's a bit of both.
It's let's talk about what could happen, like where we could go, where we would like to go. But at the same time, you can't just run to the finish line. There are hurdles in the way and we have to take each hurdle one at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So returning to the desert island last time, which was a long time ago, your pick for the desert island was, and I quote, one of my Austins. Would that still be your choice?
Oh my God, you know what? I think maybe it would. I just think she's so funny and she's so comforting. And I think whilst there are loads of other different genres that I love reading, there's just something about, you know, humor and comfort and characters that feel real that you'd want to have on a desert island.
Yeah.
So it would probably be Pride and Prejudice. I'm just going to be that basic.
Well, that was my next question was going to be, well, you didn't specify last time, but so if you specify, it would be Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, it probably would. Yeah, it's that thing that I can rewatch the BBC adaptation of that every Christmas and never be bored. And I just think, you know, there are so many books I love, but would I want to read them, you know, every year? No, but with those, I can.
Are you a BBC over the Keira Knightley version?
Absolutely, yeah. BBC all the way.
Colin Firth. Amazing. I've got some more questions coming up about specific things that Chloe is looking for, popular trends, the idea of concept is king, and a little bit about AI. But we are now at the end of the regular episode and into the extended cut, exclusive to Patreon subscribers. So anyone listening who hasn't yet joined the Patreon, please do think about it. It goes a long way towards covering the cost of running this podcast. Amazing. Well, we can end on that rather confusing note. Thank you so much, Chloe, for coming on the podcast and chatting with me again. It's been really, really fun catching up with you, hearing about all the things that you're doing, and you sharing with us some of the insights from the other side of the curtain of publishing. It's been really fascinating.
Thanks so much, Jamie. It was great to chat.
And for anyone listening, if you are wanting to keep up with what Chloe is doing, you can follow her on Twitter at Chloe Seeger or on Instagram at Chloe N Seeger. If you're thinking about submitting to Chloe or any of the other agents at Madeline Milburn, head over to the website and there is a form submission page, which makes it all very simple and easy, so you can't get it wrong. To support the podcast, like, follow, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow along on socials. Join the Patreon for extended episodes, ad-free and a week early, and check out my other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again to Chloe, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.